Welcome into Other People's Shoes. I'm your host, Neil. And today has been an episode long coming. As we close out season two here, I want to first off by saying thank you. Thank you for taking this journey with me through this you lost me leaving the church journey that we've taken together. Today, I sit across from a man who has been a mentor, a father figure, a leader, and also my pastor. That's right. Today I sit across from a gentleman by the name of Pastor Lee Gregory. He is the pastor of the church that I left. I share my story on why I left and why I still choose to go to a church, not his church, but a different church. And you're going to hear that story unfold right now. I hope you're ready, because this was a very powerful episode for me to tape. And I hope you will join me in this episode as you walk in my shoes. Here we go.
Hey, come take a walk with me. Not like you used to do. Do something different and put yourself in other people's shoes. Open up your mind and open up your eyes and change your direction.
Welcome into Other People's Shoes. I'm your host, Neil, and it is happening. The long-awaited episode, I foreshadowed it in multiple episodes prior to this one. I am almost shaking with excitement to sit across from my guest today. I'm going to give his full name, if that's okay.
Whoa, wait a second. I have family members who do not know my full name. So why would I do that
maybe
over an airway where
that.
I have no idea?
Exactly, right? You well, I'll introduce you how I know you. How's that sound?
Whatever you want to say, okay. Go ahead. At my age, complete transparency.
Complete transparency. Well, I met you. I'll introduce you how I met you back when I was 13. I met this man. My family started attending his church, or the church that God has put him in charge of, I guess is probably the best way to say that. And that is Pastor Lee Gregory.
Okay.
Of the neighborhood church. And Pastor Lee, I just want to say right at the onset, it is truly a pleasure to sit across from you today because of the journeys we have traveled, many of them, many miles together, not only before I became on staff here at church. We are actually sitting in the Medford Neighborhood Church, so it's even like a little bit of homecoming in a sense for me. But I do want to say right at the onset, you could have been anywhere else today. You have a lot of demands as a pastor and other things, and I just want to say, for the record, I appreciate this wholeheartedly that you're giving me these moments as we dive into some deep stuff today. So thank you for that.
My memory serves. I want people to know I'm listening to what you're saying.
Yeah, memory serves 35 plus years of ministry, right?
40.
40 now.
Yeah, coming right up to the 40th year.
Okay. That's awesome.
Started pretty young, Neil, about as young as when you were joining with us.
Right? So do you remember that first church kind of?
Absolutely.
Back in the day?
Absolutely.
What would you tell that young Lee back then? About ministry and just life in general.
I had a mentor in my life. I probably would have never became a pastor if this genuine Christian man, who to this very day I have only seen that he is a genuine Jesus follower, all these years, he's the one who invited me to come alongside in a role of pastoral leadership. And I listened to his words, and they still haunt me from those youngest days. I didn't enter the ministry thinking I had to be a pastor for the rest of my life. He just felt seasons of life come and they change, but there can be a season where you serve God's people in a pastoral role. So I would still warn anybody young in ministry, just because you enter a pastoral role with God's people doesn't mean that's where your whole life's journey will be. I'm as surprised as anyone today that I've been on this journey for 40 years.
Wow.
In this specific way of serving
right.
Jesus and his church.
Yeah. I think that's awesome. I think that's so great that you can go back and obviously credit where you started from. Not a lot of people can do that, mm-hmm. you know, so that's awesome. Pastor Lee, we always like to lead off with kind of a funny question. So it might sound peculiar okay. to you, but here it is. What is your shoe size?
That's a funny question.
Yes.
Which foot?
Is it different?
Well, I just thought I'd add to the question.
Well, you're left-handed, right?
I wear a size 11.
Okay, size 11.
Yes.
Do you have a certain brand that you like to wear?
Yes.
What brand is that?
The least expensive.
The least expensive.
The okay. ones on sale.
Gotcha. All right. Okay. So the reason why I ask is because we're in your shoes today. Oh. So it's easy for me, at least, to be in your shoes.
Let me tell you what shoes you won't ever see me
okay.
wear.
Okay, what shoes are we never going to see you wear?
Sandals.
Okay.
Open-toed.
Right.
Barefoot kind.
Right. Yeah,
I just don't.
Just can't handle it.
I just can't handle bare feet.
Yeah.
Makes foot washing really difficult for a guy like
me.
I
bet. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So there we go. So Pastor Lee, we're going to just jump right in now that we got the silliness, so to speak, out of the way as far as the
shoe thing. No more silly?
Nope.
I got to
well,
be serious?
Well, we might. It might go silly. We'll see. But my question that I really want to kind of lead off with is, what is the hardest part about being a pastor, do you feel like?
Well, the most difficult job description in a pastoral role.
Yeah.
It's easy for me to answer because it's always difficult when it does happen. And it's a part of pastoral ministry that has, it just keeps coming and going, and it's a specific experience. So simply put, the most difficult and painful part of pastoral service is when there is discord, brokenness, divorce in the relationships of God's people. And it's difficult enough when my own heart will love someone, and then events come across to people and a perception is created where we have to quit being together. Now, it's terribly painful. Before I was a pastor, I was still caring for people. And I thought, going into ministry, how much better could you love people and have them love you back? I know that sounds selfish, but I like people, and I've always liked to make them laugh and do whatever, make people happy. And then to turn around and have the very people you love hit a wall of they're so unhappy, they separate, divorce or break. Now, with that said, I want to make sure the pain from my heart comes across, but it really gets experienced by the children. When my young son comes to me and says, "Dad, why is this family no longer here?" Because when the family's adults leave, they take their children from each other. And so the real painful level comes down when children are experiencing the consequences of the broken adults who quit each other and take their children with them. That is the most painful part I've experienced in ministry. The Apostle Paul said it pretty well, I believe, when he was talking about all the stuff he went through to serve Jesus. He had been shipwrecked. He had been beat with straps, and he had been stoned by rocks and left for dead. And at the very end of all of his description of what made him qualified to be listened to, he says, "And after all this, I still have to deal with the discord among the brethren." I think in some ways I can at least relate with the pain of broken relationships.
Yeah, and you mentioned your son. Dan's been on a past episode.
I've heard that. Yeah, I didn't get to hear the episode. I heard he'd been on it.
He was on a really, in my mind, a very awesome episode called Good. Discouragement, and just talking about kind of his lowest point, you know, and kind of what that was like. And so, so just so my listeners know, this is Dan's dad that he references in that show. So, in a very good way, by the way, you're put in a very positive light
through my son's eyes.
Through your son's eyes, makes
that,
a very difficult
that
call.
That must be grace.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, he made that very difficult call on Father's Day.
Neil, whether your audience knows this or not, I can sound objective. I was leery to ever refer to you that I loved you like a son. Mm. And that I love you like a son,
right.
Especially when you were on staff with us, because I knew some of the concerns you had that would still be going on between you and your father's role.
Yeah.
How can I not sit here today and still say that, again, those are the relationships that church family can grow into?
Right.
When Jesus told his followers to follow him, his family may disown them, or a follower may be disowned by their family. But he said, I will give you fathers and mothers and sisters and brothers. So going back to this whole topic, I think there's a strong human historical batch of evidence that says the most painful part for God is when he sees people broken in their relationships.
Right.
Okay.
So you have, in your mind, and I think we even talked about this a little bit at pre-show, is you have really three keys to ministry that you really feel like kind of define who you are and define what you're doing in ministry. And I think, I think there are really three keys that may help somebody understand where you're coming from in ministry, but also if they don't have these in a current ministry, that maybe this would be something to take a look at.
Are you talking about the three issues of when a relationship is most vulnerable?
Correct.
Okay.
Because I led that really badly.
What you said wasn't even
I'm
on
not
that
even
page.
Sure.
So
yeah.
That's okay. So whatever you want to edit.
Yeah.
I want to say if I have three keys of ministry, here would be right off the top of my heart.
Right.
I'm a mess, but Jesus is not. There was a book written, I'm okay, you're okay. Absolutely wrong. I'm not okay, but Jesus is. That would be key number one.
Right.
Key number two I would have in ministry is the Bible is worthy of credibility. There is no other document on the planet that has the founding structure that the Bible has in both its Old and New Testaments. That would be key number two. That's how I even know who Jesus really is. It's not because someone came and told me. It's the very people who gave their all to protect and proclaim the message. So Jesus first, the scriptures are holy. And I would say then on the top of my heart then is, and I am called to love his family. I believe no one should be in pastoral ministry unless the foundational soul they have is they love God's family, and even those who don't know God yet.
Who would you put in God's family? Because some would say, well, if I am this lifestyle or that lifestyle, does that mean that I still get to be part of God's family?
Oh, well, that's another story, because I can't separate the whole message of Jesus and the Bible is sin is serious,
right,
and sin is real. And the consequences of sin ultimately have the wage of death. I will never be different than, because nothing in my world has shown me that that's untrue.
Right.
The world I'm in, people do go out and do their sins, and they say, look how good I'm doing. And a year later, they are experiencing brokenness. When I refer to all humanity as being God's family, is because he is the Heavenly Father and gave every one of us life. And he created us as an act of his love. But if I choose to reject him, just as my son for a season rejected God's journey and found himself as broken as anybody could be, or if anybody else, when I've rejected God's journey for my life, he allows me the freedom to reject him. And therefore, not everybody. We can reject being part of his family, but he keeps inviting us to be in his family. That would be my third pillar of ministry. Now, I do know that what's going on in our world, I see it daily. I'm a school bus driver.
That's what
did
I was just
going
to lead into.
I've been a school bus driver for 12 years now.
Right.
Now, in those 12 years, what makes it somewhat unique, I've been driving school buses, but not just for one neighborhood, not one route.
Right.
I've been a 12-year substitute. I've driven every single bus our school districts have. Every route, I drive with the special needs children that have the small vans. I have been on every neighborhood road throughout the Rogue Valley in this community. And then I've traveled beyond, even to Mexico and up to Canada on bus trips with colleges. This journey, I think I can say I've seen what's going on in our culture, and especially back here in Southern Oregon even. And what is going on in our culture is still the terrible consequences of broken relationships from humanity that should be families with each other and should know love with each other. And once you have that brokenness going on, the domino effects continue. Go ahead.
You mentioned your brokenness of the community and even mm-hmm. society in general. Why do you think people are so casting aside relationships? Why it's so easy to just, I'm done with you, we're done, let's go.
Why are people treating relationships like Dixie cups?
Yeah, essentially.
That's number one, they're being taught to.
Okay.
They're taught.
How are they being taught to?
What the Bible teaches to do when a person has experienced, now here comes the three things.
Yeah.
One of these three items.
Okay.
When someone has a difference with someone.
There it is.
A disagreement with someone, or a disappointment with someone.
Say those one more time without me interrupting.
Differences, disagreements, and disappointments. Now, I need to let you know really quick, they sound like they're the same word, but they're not exactly. You and I differ.
Right.
You have a special team that's blue, obviously. What's your special team?
North Carolina.
I don't even know
what the Tar Heels.
North Carolina is. Well, it's a Tar. Anybody named Tar Heel has issues. So you see right there, we wouldn't agree. That would be a difference.
That's true.
Now, if you were to tell me the Tar Heels are the best at what?
Basketball, college basketball.
Yeah, I would have to say I think Oregon. Now, I could be wrong, but see, we disagree.
Right.
And when you call, if I call your Tar Heel some kind of name, wouldn't you be disappointed?
I would be very disappointed. See, Maybe even sad.
And so these words can overlap like they so often do with people. And once I've been disappointed with someone, next thing it's easy to be disagreeable with them. Next thing it's already recognized, man, we are different. And I quit on you. And that is the nature of our culture. The value system of the world we're living in is this. I can summarize it in a cliche. Hurt me once, it's your fault. Hurt me twice. Do you know the finish of that?
Help me.
You know, your younger generation.
I know.
We don't get the cliches anymore. Well, I guarantee your audience, there's a whole bunch of people
over
40.
They're probably just shouting it.
It says, hurt me once, your fault. You did it to me. Yeah. But hurt me twice, it's my fault.
Yeah.
Because I let you do it to me.
Hurt me once, shame on me. Hurt me once, shame on you.
Ah, is see, that where you're going? You've revised it. Right. They mean the same.
Yeah.
But what's that say?
Right.
You've hurt me. First of all, Neil, for a fact, you believed I hurt you.
I did.
You believed it with all your soul.
I did.
You believed I wronged you.
Absolutely.
And actually, there were times I disappointed you.
Yes.
No disputing it.
No disputing.
Sure, I'm not a perfect guy.
Sure.
But let me tell you something. You got a bitter heart at one time.
I did.
And then it didn't matter what I did.
Right.
I could do 10 things to show I love you. But when I would show you do one thing that disappointed you, where did that take you? Where did you go back to?
Back to my anger.
Back to the pain. Back to that deep root. Our culture today, most every person I meet, still is a deep root of some pain from their past that's still there. And sooner or later, some behavior from someone will trigger that root. It sprouts, and next thing, they see a person they were in a relationship with very negative eyes. So the three D's when relationships are most vulnerable that I would share with anybody is when you're having to deal with a difference with someone or a disagreement or a disappointment and the world doesn't know how to deal with it. I work in a secular environment. In the work environment, I get to see quite often about a third of the workforce doesn't like the other third of their workforce. What's that leave? That was only two thirds. One third doesn't like the other third. So we have one third left, right? They're just kind of caught in the middle.
Right.
And I have observed for years watching people who like each other today. They like each other for a while. They date. They mate. They do whatever. And then, bingo, some difference, disagreement, or disappointment happens. And then it triggers.
Right.
And now they start the domino effect and they're calling, just like children in school. Today they're liking each other and tomorrow they're calling each other names.
Right.
We're taught that.
I think that's so important. And I think that leads into, again, the overwhelming or the overarching, you know, theme that we're after, which is why are people leaving the church? So in your opinion, you know, in 40 years of ministry, why do you think people leave?
You're not going to like my answer probably, or neither is not.
I want it. Whether I like it or not, doesn't matter.
I think I have an accurate answer.
I think you probably do. I mean, 40-plus years, you probably have a pretty good one.
I think I have an accurate answer.
Yeah.
Your question is, first of all, a limited, I think, and not an appropriate question.
Okay.
Because why are people leaving the church? Well, you go talk to people and they'll tell you all their terrible stories, how some leader in a church wronged them, which leaders have wronged.
Yep.
Terrible things.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard the church is like a light in the darkness, should be like a light. Well, it attracts a lot of bugs. And historically in our culture, many congregations have raised up some people that are not very nice to become their leaders. I'll to warn you right now, anybody who says, I want to be a church pastor, they need to be examined. Very close. To find out what's really motivating their
hearts. Yeah, I was just going to ask, what do you mean by examined?
They need to be examined, vetted. They need to be looked into what really is motivating their heart.
Their hidden agenda, maybe.
They don't even know their agenda. Okay. How about the person who thinks, if I'm not a pastor, I'm a failure?
Right.
Then you're in trouble with that one.
Yeah.
Next one, what about the one who says, I know the word of God and everybody else is wrong, and so they're always right? What kind of leader is that going to be?
Right.
What if the one who comes in just is lazy? And they think pastoral roles, you sit in your office for all day and everybody likes you and don't do much work. I've met a few of those. Neil, you weren't any of those, by the way.
Thank you. I was going to say, did I fall into any of those
categories? I met you as a young man who I still see today what I saw back when we first met. Young man who's wanting to walk right. But you were also a young man who brought in brokenness.
Yep, I did.
And as that brokenness starts to reveal itself, were you in a place where we could all go together? Could we join together to work on that brokenness? Or did you go straight to a place that so many go to of, I'm disappointed, I'm not getting what I want, I don't agree, and now I'm angry, and I'm going to leave. So when that is what happens. Most of the workforce turnover in our culture, when people leave jobs, it's not because they can't do the job. Most of our turnover, this is not my data. You can find this in any work journal. Most people quit their jobs because they're not getting along with the people they're working with. And the job environment is unpleasant. That's most job turnovers. And when you go to a new job, it's all pleasant. Probably because nobody really knows each other for a while. Or you don't know them.
I heard it said best. I don't know who said it, but somebody said the best place to hide from God is in a new church.
Yeah.
What do you think about that statement?
I think I've said it and you heard it.
You probably got
it. No, I'm not joking. Because it has been said by me here many times.
Well, there you go. That's
and one of the best place to hide from your problems is with new friends.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially the ones you go find that agree with you.
Right, absolutely.
Especially when you find people who agree with the people you don't like.
Right.
That's our work environment today. People are quick to be willing to talk about people they don't like. I'm not big on my phone watching social media. In fact, my wife would be impressed I even use the term social media.
I'm impressed.
There you go. I'm not big on that.
You don't have a Facebook?
What's that?
You don't have a... Yeah.
I don't have my own Facebook account, but my wife is there taking care of all
there
that for
go.
Me. But I get to see all the folks who spend a lot of their time either in the world of immediate gratification with games or immediate gratification with slander.
Yeah.
It's sad.
It is sad.
It's sad, and I don't think that's at all. So when you ask the question, why are people leaving church? I think your question should be, why are people leaving each other? Neil, I have a question for you. You live in another city close by. I'm not going to say the city in case they don't want to admit it. They might not want to admit it. Eagle Point?
Yep.
Have you ever joined a PTA club?
No.
A lodge?
No.
A group out there?
Mm-mm.
Have you coached Little League?
Nope.
Then you should be, because get out there.
I should be
very
absolutely.
Active and influencing.
You're absolutely
others.
Right.
You're a wonderful guy.
My schedule won't permit
it. I think you can encourage young men who are about 50% of our culture of young boys do not have a positive male influence, and that's in our culture. That's in Southern Oregon.
Say that one more time.
About 50% of our young boys community of our Southern Oregon area do not have a positive male influence who is teaching them how to blow their nose without a Kleenex.
Right.
Who's teaching them how to be, well, first of all, your schools today have a whole motion going that maybe we shouldn't call boys boys or girls girls until they're about 12 years of age and they decide what they want to be. That is an active part of legislation in the state of Oregon, as that's been informed to me by educators. So back to this, there's young people, get out there. But what I was going to ask you, if you've been with Little League, if you've been with the lodges, if you've been with different clubs, if you've been with your school's PTA, you will discover people are leaving. Any groups, all groups are having a smaller enrollment because people don't really like being together anymore.
Do you think that's the root issue?
I think the root issue, that's the same problem for those groups is the same problem that's really in our churches.
Okay.
Really.
There was a Barna group, I'm sure, as a church leader, you're familiar with the Barna group.
I'm not familiar with their most recent data.
So they did a study a while back. They wrote this book called You Lost Me, and that's kind of where I took a lot of these, you know, episodes from, and that actually is what kind of I guess, rekindled our connection is after a voicemail I left, because I had just finished this book and was kind of reflecting on my time here at Medford Neighborhood Church and just our relationship. And, you know, realizing that as a youth leader, I put so much pressure on myself in you know, looking back, that I didn't disciple kids really well, that I didn't get them plugged into, you know, ministry, whether it be here or, you know, maybe a joining ministry or an alliance ministry or whatever, that I didn't do a good job in that. And so, you know, maybe Satan was playing with me a little bit in a lot of respects, because it's like, wow, look at all these kids that don't go to church anymore. That's your fault. Look at the damage you caused. And then, you know, we'll get into my reason why I left Neighborhood Church later on. But really looking at that and having to look at that and go, man, did I really fail? Not only God, but the church, you know, in general. So that was kind of the wake-up call for me in a lot of respects, to say, what am I doing? You know, you talk about getting involved. What am I doing to get involved, well, to help this
generation? I wasn't trying to get you to go there let me say it again.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
All I would say is we need loving, caring,
right,
genuine people who won't injure others with their hidden secrets,
right,
engaged in the community.
Right.
But once you get in those engagements with the community, you can discover people aren't just leaving church.
Right.
Groups are having a hard time keeping people together, especially in this culture. Now, I'm not a great world traveler. I haven't been to a lot of places, except I do a lot of, well, you don't have to leave the internet. Lots of information will show you, but there's still some cultures who even don't have the same faith base in knowing Jesus that we do, that I will teach, but they still have some of his very clear values and they practice it. Like, family is sacred. You may not agree with your family, but you don't quit on your family. Now, that's in some cultures still that aren't having, don't have, but that's a biblically based value. It's not our value in our culture now. Again, family members treat each other like Dixie cups. My own personal family, and I do want any hearer to know this, I'm surely not a perfect guy, but I'm a pretty decent one. I'm 61 years old now. I don't have any criminal record because I was pretty sneaky and got away with whatever wrongs I did do, but I never did the big wrongs anyway, and I'm just a pretty decent guy. But I even have family who won't deal with me. I've never stole, lied, or cheated. And the fact, the biggest reason they don't want to deal with me is there are times I don't agree with them. Now, Neil, that's another major root that's in our culture, another value. One is people aren't as valuable as they used to be, like family members, but another one, here's a value. If you love me, you have to agree with me, is what is a message. And, or, for me to love you, for me to treat you with respect, I have to agree with you. That is a wrong value. It's not in your Bible either. In fact, when Jesus walked on earth, he made it really clear to his followers. He said, if you just love those who love you, you're no different than anybody. He said, I tell you this, you're to truly connect, engage, bring into your life people who even hate you. You're to actually love them. Now, Neil, if you want to know what really happened between us on a root level.
Yeah, we can get into that.
Well, I'm just going to say the love issue was what was it really at question. If you want to go down the root. For a lot of people have thought, I don't love them. When down deep, their disappointment was based, I couldn't agree with them. I couldn't affirm them on their decision. I couldn't because it didn't match what the Bible would teach. But can you relate? Can you remember some of that? Would that be a basis?
I can, absolutely.
And then when I have to stand with my own son who was involved in a very dark side of the culture for a while, you don't get darker than the drug world.
Dan was pretty in-depth with his stuff.
Well, I didn't get to hear it, but he will tell you this. Yeah. I believe he can honestly tell you, there'd be times I would just say, Dan, I can't go on that journey with you. I won't enable it. Yeah. I won't pay for that journey. There's more adults around our world today that need to do that as an act of, but it was an act of love, not an act of my anger towards them, not an act of my disappointment. And Neil, while I do have anger that can be within me, and while disappointment is part of my heart's emotions, in all my memory, even with you, I just begged that whatever I did would come across as loving. And I'm not sure sometimes, no matter what we do, people can see that. If in their heart and eyes, there's so much anger and the disappointment has grown up. And And then add that I wasn't perfect. There's some areas here that, for instance, churches today, people can tell you their disappointments because what are people looking for in churches? Hope I'm not saying this too long, but
that's okay.
What are they looking for in churches? Because here you came into this ministry.
Right.
We're just a small ministry.
Yes,
I can't give you guys Starbucks on Sunday.
Why not?
There are some ministries you can go down and you can sit in a comfortable recliner and watch the service. Or you can sit. No, I know it. You can sit in chairs.
You're not seeing my face, but it's perplexed on
it's,
that.
It's
That's
true.
Awesome.
I've got a church in Reading. That's exactly. In fact, people get there early so they can get the recliner.
It's hilarious.
Get their cafe moti and or whatever you call it. There you have yeah. in trouble. But they're going to sit in this comfy chair to watch the service. That's their sermon. That's only going to be 30 minutes long because that they can do it to the schedule. While others got there later and they had to sit in rows and. And if that's what you're looking for in a church, we're all disappointing each other.
Right.
Do you know, in all my years as a pastor here, 26 years in Medford, and my memory could be wrong now by way of what's happened. Somebody could hear this and say, Pastor, I didn't do that.
Right.
But in 26 years, I've had hundreds and hundreds of calls. People asking, okay, we're new in town, or we're thinking about going to the Medford Neighborhood Church. So what's the Medford Neighborhood Church like?
Yeah.
And before I answer it, I always say, well, what are you looking for in a church?
What's usually the answer you get?
Looking for a place for my family. Okay, well, we
Check.
Definitely have a
yeah,
place for
absolutely.
Family.
Yeah.
But do you provide this? Do you provide that? Do you provide childcare? Will you help us move our home? And the list, I actually had a person not too long ago say, what kind of coffee do you serve? I'm serious, Neil. But that's not the point.
Right.
Here's the point. In 26 years, I've never had someone simply call and say, does your church teach people to obey Jesus? Mm. To not only live what he said, but to live the way he lived.
To be a disciple of his.
Yeah, but I mean truly imitate him.
Right.
We all say we're disciples.
Sure.
But every Christian I met, well, I believe in Jesus. Well, are you obeying him? Well, yeah.
Are you imitating him like
but
Paul
are you,
says?
Yes. Do you really obey him? Yeah. Or have you changed some
right.
of his message? And
right.
So back to this. I've never had anybody really call and say, I'm just looking for a people who are following Jesus with all their heart, with all their strength, with all their might. Just will you teach me how to follow him? Because we do that real well here. But we're not the best youth program around. And we don't have the choir of 150 voices. We don't. But I'll tell you what, when we come together, in fact, we really make it simple.
You don't have the easy chairs, right? I mean, I haven't been in the sanctuary in a while. But...
Well, we did get rid of the wooden pews.
Okay.
And we have some cushy chairs.
Nice.
But you sit like you're in a row.
Well, there's that.
Why are people not going to church?
Yeah.
First of all, churches are like restaurants.
Mm. How so?
There's no two exactly the same unless you're a chain. And even if you go to the same McDonald's, the facilities aren't the same. Their buildings have different, the restrooms located different. No two restaurants are exactly the same, and no two ministries will be exactly the same. How can a ministry be just like each other, what you're looking for, when it's filled with people and there's no person who's just like another person? So ministries differ, and then when people come, and no matter where they go, they're going to experience a difference, a disagreement, or a disappointment. And when that happens, they're still not taught what God would have us do during those times. And so they do what comes natural. They do what they feel. They do what others have done. And right now, the most common counseling for a wife who is unhappy with her husband is you need to dump him. That's our most common counsel in our culture. Even some church environments, counselors will say, nah, you guys aren't, it's not good, go ahead and divorce. We have very little counsel on how to repair, how to restore, or even how for the first time to get a right relationship. Today, if a young girl is with child and she goes to the most popular counseling centers, they're not going to tell her how to be a mom. They're going to say, what do you want? What do you feel like choosing? The illustration I'm giving you is over and over again is going to be people have been doing what they feel. Trusting their feelings, thinking, and someone tells them, do what you feel. Most teenagers I see get their counsel from other teenagers.
That's dangerous.
Who feel just like them.
Right.
You've got a 12-year-old daughter, don't you?
I do.
Do you really want her getting counseled?
No, of course
from,
not.
We could just move from there, right?
Yeah.
Well, I'm just trying to show you that in our world today, why are people leaving churches? Because they're leaving everything else too. They're leaving each other behind. I do a lot of funerals in this community, I have for the last 26 years. Local mortuaries have informed me that funerals are down while people are still dying. The number of funerals are down. People aren't gathering for funerals. Many people today are dying, and they die, and they die, and they're isolated. Nobody's there to want to gather or grieve for them.
That's sad.
It's sad, but it's true.
Yeah.
You look around your world, Neil, you will discover that people are on paths that ultimately cause them to end up being very lonely. Some of the work environments I get to be in our community, about 25% of the people that I get to see that are my age go home alone. And what I've just said, if this is put out over the airways, I might have some people be unhappy with me. But it is true. They go home alone. And the next thing that is just as true for most is they believe they're right. They still believe they're right. They're right that they quit their family. They're right that they don't talk to their children. They're right that they're no longer involved and everybody else is wrong.
Well, I want to dig into that just a little bit too, especially even in my situation, because the background on me, you know, my family came to Neighborhood Church in 94. I graduated in 99 from South. And the whole time, you know, I'm in youth group, I'm in middle school, you know, ministries here at the church. And, you know, it took a leader leaving for me to even have a chance to serve in ministry. And even looking back at that time, it was a hard time. But even that leader chose to quit on his family, chose to go a different path away from his you know, his wife. And we don't have to mention him by name. But it was hard. I remember as a youth, that was hard. It was hard to see, you know, this leader that we adored, that we respected, leave. And what break if, relationship not only
go,
with you, but the church.
Let's just go to a what if. Yeah. What if Doreen, who is my wife, yeah. and I, what if you got the word, we're divorcing?
I would be shocked.
Like right now.
I would be shocked.
And see, then you weren't listening real well sometimes when I was preaching.
Probably not.
I know. Here's the deal, because most people don't listen real close.
Sure.
Years ago, I've always carried this in my heart, that we're always vulnerable, Neil.
Yeah.
And I call it the principle of vulnerability. Humans are vulnerable to getting sick, aren't they?
Yeah.
To catch the flu, right. You get sick. So you do things to protect yourself right. To keep from getting sick. You take your shots, you know, wear a coat in the cold. I just want you to know, I really still believe, my wife and I still believe this very day, we're still vulnerable. Our relationship with just a few sinful decisions, we could be just as broken as anybody. We're not immune to the consequences of bad decisions, which right. The Bible would often call sin. We're not immune, still not. And Neil, I taught you that.
You
before
did.
Before you got married.
I know.
Please live like you're always vulnerable.
And I didn't heed that. And that's what leads into my next thing, right?
Okay.
Is just this idea that, you know, full disclosure, you know, I get hired in September 16th, 2017, went back and did research. So that's why I can just pull these dates off the top of my head, by the way.
You were hired when?
September 16th, 2007.
You said 17.
I messed up there. So 2007.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I get hired. There's some fanfare. There's some excitement. We're excited about partnering together in ministry. And then come March 29th, I had to go back and look. March 29th, I have to resign because of a choice I made. And this is super clear. I want this abundantly clear. I made this choice. And so that choice then leads to kind of, in a sense, a domino effect of what needs to take place. And that's where Pastor Lee and I, in all intents, really break relationship. I break the relationship because I choose to leave the church. I choose about a year later, roughly, to leave the church.
Yeah. For the record,
I didn't leave right away.
Of course you didn't leave. Most people don't leave right away. They hang around long enough to share their pain, their sorrow,
right.
And get a lot of
and
talk
I did
going.
A lot of that.
I know.
And I did a lot of that.
Then you did it after you left.
Right,
and it was
absolutely,
still going.
Yeah.
Well, Neil, That is part of our human behaviors and journeys. First of all, you were never asked to leave the church.
Correct. That's, and we need to make that clear too.
And yeah. I don't think that you needed to leave the church to keep growing so one day you maybe would be restored into a pastoral role. I want you to hear that. We've never had that conversation until this moment.
So right now.
Here it is. I'm telling you, when we said your pastoral role was having to come to a stop,
right,
that your decisions and your actions had disqualified you from that role,
right,
then it was you and the ongoing journey
right.
that chose to the hurt, the pain. And it's understandable what I say. Most people do that journey. And then you left.
Right. How did you feel when I left?
I wept. I don't like to go back to places.
I know you don't, but...
No, I don't. Let me tell you, there's a place in my heart. Remember I said bitterness can have a root and stay there?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a file cabinet in my soul, and I think everybody has, where if you pull it open, your feelings are still there. First of all, I had a young man who came from brokenness, who every step this congregation did with you was to help you maybe during these vulnerable years and young years as a man and young years of life.
I was rough.
Super rough. The brokenness. And so and then we're journeying, and you were growing. You're growing well, and there were many times you didn't agree with what was going on around you. You had a very stubborn spirit about you, and I think mom would agree, your brothers, your
everybody.
There's a tenacious, stubborn side to you, and that's also can be a strength, though, because we also teach this. Tim LaHaye said it well. Our weakness is probably just a strength being misused.
Correct. I would agree with that.
So we tried to work that with you, and then, but when we had to say, Neil, your role has to stop.
Right.
I think people already heard today that in your role, you had a lot of thoughts going on inside of your mind and heart and soul. Hey, look at this. I'm now in this place, and I have this, and people should follow, and I'm going to build this. And you don't remember maybe so well how many times even people around you were saying, wait a second, Neil's jumping pretty fast here, and we're not sure that he has a clear perspective. And there were times we'd bring items to your attention that we felt were inappropriate, but and all it would take, here it comes, but everybody hears this. I'm going to ask you, Neil, do you know what it takes to restore most relationships? All it takes.
I would think admitting that you've done wrong, if there's wrong.
You could not have said that better.
Okay. Did I get
that? Better than that. Okay. I mean, I don't, in my personal view, but I'm not going to say it doesn't matter what Lee Gregory thinks. It matters. Every primary message. Yes. Every message that Jesus gave, his apostles gave, everyone, when people finally said, okay, we understand, what can we do? The next word was repent.
Yep.
And that's admitting, maybe here I didn't mean to be wrong. Right. I didn't mean to. And you numerous times repented.
Yeah.
And do you ever remember when you said, okay, I talked to the wrong people. I shouldn't have done that. Okay, okay, I misinterpreted this. Okay, really was just a misunderstanding, but I held it in my heart and it just kept growing. Well, and now,
and I think that's the key to all this, right? Is that for a long time, and I mean a long time, you know, I sat across from Lee and we served together, like I said, in ministry, and it was good. It was bad at times. I mean, I was young, and they put people around me, supported me with people, had accountability. All of that aside, I still chose to break relationship because of something I did. So I allowed we'll call it what it is, I allowed my sin to cloud my judgment of people who loved me, people who supported me, people who only wanted the best for me, to basically say at the end of the day, I'm done.
I divorce you.
I'm done. And as painful as that was to walk away, it created a ripple effect for years of me being mad. And of course, when you're mad, what do? You tell everybody because you want somebody to, side with you, sympathize with you. And there were so many years, and I can look back now and really say, how dare I treat somebody who loved me and only wanted my best interest with such just flippancy and contentment and some ill will. And I even called you
a contempt, not contentment, but contempt.
Thank you for that.
I was treated with contempt.
Yeah, but even animosity. I even said, you know, before pre-show that I did. I carried a lot of animosity towards you because I thought, you know, here's this guy says he loves me and he supports me and he wants the best for me, but look at how he's treating me. And it's like, wait a second. Who are you to say that? He's trying to love you and you're not wanting to be loved. So anyway.
Neil, there is just a human limitation we all have human limitations. Right. There's only so much I'm going to put this right back in your
Please.
Heart because that's how vulnerable we all are in our relationships. You have a 12-year-old daughter
right now.
At that season of life. Does she ever disagree with you?
All the time.
Does your wife ever disagree with you?
Most of the time.
Do they ever team up together and disagree?
Feels like it.
My point is when
Elizabeth
she's
gets
on this
another
journey,
shout out, so thank you.
If she
for
doesn't
that.
Learn, if she doesn't learn God's ways of handling differences, right. disagreements, and disappointments with her dad, the enemy is going to come in with all kinds of voices
right.
to justify her contempt, her hatred of you. And one day, perhaps, heaven forbid, but you know what? Heaven doesn't always forbid. People get to make their choices. What if one day she left you?
Yeah.
And it took years to come back together. I want to say this so everybody hears this. It shouldn't take years.
No.
You and I are sitting here, what year was it you actually left and separated?
Yeah, so it would have probably been roughly around 2009.
What year is it now?
2019.
And the math is how many years?
That's 10 years.
The good news is we sit here as two souls
right.
who aren't at odds and
yep.
hiding from each
nope,
other.
We're not.
Is anger in our hearts for
no,
each other?
At least not, in mine, and, not, and I know not in yours.
If it's in there, I don't know it.
Right.
All right.
Fair.
The heart is deceitful. Who can know it? But it's
right.
I don't know it.
Right.
I sit here and I've been thrilled because what is happening in this moment is rare
right.
for all humans.
But
it was 10 years. I just want to make sure it's
yeah,
clear.
Please.
Those are wasted 10 years.
They are.
We'll never get them back.
Nope.
We could have shared memories together.
Absolutely.
We could have laughed
Picnics,
together.
Captain,
we
Captain
could have discovered
golf.
That, you know what? Yeah, there. I did some of the things you did.
Sure.
I told you that.
Yep.
You didn't have to leave.
I know.
We could have walked together, but for a while you would have to been not the leader you were.
Right.
So we could keep building.
Right.
I'm celebrate that others that you were wise enough to bring others into your life
right.
that have still even brought you to the point where you've been being built.
I think, Pastor Lee, that's why I was so excited about this episode for me, because one, I got to be a little more vulnerable, which people have asked, when are you going to be on? When are you going to be vulnerable? When are we going to be in your shoes? Like, nobody wants to be in my shoes. Let's just
What
be
size
honest.
Are they?
They're 10 and a half or 11. That's why I said we could
right.
probably wear the same shoes. But my point in doing this is because I thought, in concept at least, that we could walk this out together. You and I could be an example of what it's like to really see restoration take place between, not that you're the church as a whole, because you're not, you're just an individual. You're just a, you know, a door holder, so to speak. You're just a shepherd, right? Just a guy being used by God, whatever you want to say.
Well, I didn't, that's what you wanted to say.
Well, that's what I want to say, but that's how I would maybe look at you in some respects, some facet. I love that word, by the way. Is this idea of restoration can take place between a person and potentially a church,
but
if they allow it.
That's it. It's a if.
Right.
Neil, I came to the place where I believed I could not be the voice that could encourage your journey, that my voice was being resented. Years ago, I said to a young son who was living defiant and living and saying, trying to persuade me that the drug world is the place to be.
Right.
And I said to him, I said, you know, when I speak at all, you call it a lecture. So son, I'm telling you right now, I won't speak to you about anything in life unless you ask me first. Now the good news was he didn't wait so long in his journey, but it wasn't just asking me, he didn't wait so long to ask God. I know you've asked God in your journey way back.
Yeah.
And he's guided you on the journey you've been on. I think every human needs to be more concerned about their journey between them and God than whether they're in a church or whether they're a pastor or they're anything else. just be on your journey with God and enjoy that challenge enough. Jesus said his way is narrow and difficult and few find it. The way to destruction is broad and many go, and it's obviously easy. Neil, I admire the man you are because you're loving your wife, loving your daughter, and walking with your God. It doesn't get better than that. If someday you're a pastor, if someday you're a doctor, if someday you're what, it doesn't matter what someday is, it's what you are today. I hope everybody understands, that's strong in my heart. But you have, it's you who has walked the walk that others should walk, that has brokenness. If you're the one who has divorced people, there's a big difference. There's the one who leaves, and then the one who might have to stay and say, I'll wait till you come back. So if anybody listening, God calls his people to not divorce their relationships. God calls his people to forgive people, even if they don't come back. We are his ambassadors of forgiveness, not his messengers of judgment. I've met many pastors who think they're just the messenger. We're not. We're living in a day, and so, Neil, you have been that example, or we wouldn't be here at this moment. And you must have done that word that starts with an R and ends with an ant. Somewhere in your journey, you came and said, oh, God, what a mess I've made.
Well, and I think that was the key in you know, reading the book. Like I said, you lost me. The backside of the story is that I finished reading this book. It kind of changes my heart towards not only ministry, but changes my heart towards youth, towards people.
Good.
But then I have to do something crazy because that's just my style, right? So I interview Chad and Leslie. They were on a previous show, and I actually called Leslie, texted her, and I said, I need to get Pastor Lee's phone number. For whatever reason, I didn't have it, you know, and not that you've changed it. And so so all that aside, I call him, we meet, we have lunch, and then that kind of snowballs into this where we are now. And I just want to close the show with just giving Pastor Lee one last moment to say how important is restoration, not only in your heart, but in the church's mind. And I'll give you the last word on that.
Okay, this might have to be a two-parter for you, Neil.
Okay.
Because the question, how important is restoration? I will answer that to the best of my ability very clear, but I want to share another principle.
Okay.
To all those who have chose to break, to run, to every soul that says, but they wronged me, they're wrong, and I'm right, and I'm leaving, to right. every soul that yeah. says that. They're not going to like perhaps what I say, because when I said this to an individual, it's God's perspective.
Well,
no, I'm going to tell you right now, it's not Lee's. Okay. I get to say all it. Right. Forget Lee's perspective.
This is God's perspective.
It's from the Bible.
Okay.
So a lady came to me some years ago to tell me how terrible her life is, and especially how terrible her spouse was. Her spouse did all the terrible things a spouse should never do, and he did. And she declared she was a victim. And she was leaving him. Now the audience would say, I'm just telling you, they had a terrible marriage. And I said to her, not because it's in my head first or my thoughts, it's out of the scriptures. I said to her, how much do you want to be free? Free to where instead of having pain in your heart, fear in your heart that you're not going to get to relationships, get free of that anger that burns and keeps coming back. Because I meet people, when I hear a child say, I never want to be a parent, well, they just tell me they've been hurt. When I hear a woman say she never wants to get married, it means she's been hurt. And when a man says, you'll never get me to do that again, that means in their heart there's still all this baggage from their past. And I said to this individual, I said, how much would it be worth to have all that bad stuff out of your heart and just have love back in it? And the lady said, I would do anything. I'll do anything. And then I said to her, then you need to repent. And with anger, her eyes turned dark red immediately. I mean, the face, her cheeks got redder. She says, how dare you say I need to repent? I'm the victim. Now, Neil, can you relate to some of
Absolutely.
That view and that emotion
no,
at all?
100%.
So can I.
Yeah.
Now, my mistake at times is I come across pretty strong, direct, and maybe I don't let people whatever it takes to get into this soul that has wept and grieved and hurt when God's people hurt and hurt each other. The lady repented. And she went home. And she called me. It didn't take years. It didn't take a decade. She called me and she said, "I cannot believe it. I'm free to love him, this scallywag, and love my family." She goes, "I feel like I've just been to a Disney movie and I just feel love in my heart." So that's how important repentance is. To your question that asked this whole thing of what was the terminology exact? Restoration?
Yeah,
can restoration. You restate the question?
Yeah. How important is restoration to you and then maybe to the church as well?
It doesn't matter how important it is to me, first at least, or how important it is to an organization called a church.
Right.
Neil, do you know your Bible enough to know that every part of the Old and New Testament is a message?
All about restoration?
Yes.
Yeah.
Between the Creator and those who He created in His image, and He created them in his image as an act of love. And yet, just like the parent today who would love to be restored with their children, the Creator has given us freedom to reject His attempts to show us that He loves us, but He won't say our wrongs are good. Right. He will never say your sins are good.
Right.
You want to keep walking that walk? He's going to say, then you have to walk it to wherever it takes you.
Right.
I can't bail you out that way. And the only invitation that Jesus brought to the world was summarized in two words. Here's your quiz, Pastor Neil. He saw a couple guys out in the boat. Their whole life was spent around fishing, probably cut. By the way, we know this. Peter even cussed a little. It says he cursed when he denied him. So whole tough guys. What did he holler to them? "Hey, guys, come.
Follow me."
What was that?
"Follow me."
Go be a pastor to your family, Neil. You've been a pastor to me today.
Thank you. Just close with that, and that is when we walk in other people's shoes, we really do get a different perspective. I want to thank my guest, Pastor Lee Gregory of the Medford Neighborhood Church. You can find them online. They're on Facebook, and you can also find their number on the internet as well. I'm sure you can Google that. I'll put that in the show notes as well. But I do want to say thank you. Thank you for giving me this platform, this opportunity to listen to this episode. Stay tuned next week as we start season 3. We have a whole lot in store for you for season 3. And again, I just want to close with just thanking my guest one more time, Pastor Lee, for his time and his attention, and of course his energy in what he shared today. So thank you so much, and continue to listen. Thank you so much for listening to Other People's Shoes podcast. I, of course, am your host, Neil Matthews. Thank you for joining us these last two seasons as we close out season 2 today. So many things come to mind in this episode as I look back on it. First, what an amazing man that is that I sat before, Pastor Lee. Can't say enough about him. Great mentor, father figure, pastor in my life for so many years. I'm so glad that you guys got to join me on that journey of redemption and walking through repentance with him. I just want to say thank you. Thank you for, again, allowing me to have this platform to share my life with you and hopefully learn something from my guests. Next week, we start season 3. Man, it is going to be so exciting. I know we keep saying that, but we have so much in store for you. Please continue to listen. Next week, we will be back with you with my guest, Heather. She's going to talk about some really tough stuff. What that is exactly, well, you'll have to come back next Wednesday to find that out. Again, remember, we are on social media, Facebook, like us there, Instagram under OPS Podcast Show. You can find us there, follow us there. We are also on Twitter. Please tweet us at People's Shoes. And remember, when you walk in other people's shoes, you really do get a different perspective on life. I, of course, am your host, Neil Matthews. Look forward to seeing you next week as we kick off season 3. Are you ready? Because you know I am. Let's go into season 3. Thank you again for listening.